It's Friday, November 21st, 2014, and you're listening to We the People, Constitution Matters, right here on 1180 AM WFYL. I'm Bruce Stocking.
And I'm Corinne Lillis.
And we're going to be joined today by Gary Porter, Executive Director of the Constitution Leadership Initiative, and Charles Proctor, the law firm of Proctor and Lindsay. And today's topic, well, it's a good one considering what has transpired last evening, in which the President of the United States, in my opinion, came forth in front of the American people and violated his office, his oath, and the Constitution. And today we're going to be talking about education and the Constitution. Why is it important for people to be educated on the Constitution? And to bring us in on this topic, of course, is Gary Porter, who's on the phone with us right now. Good morning, Gary.
Morning, Bruce. Corinne, Chuck.
Yeah, now, Gary, you got to admit that it's not often that you can watch live on TV a crime being committed. Is that true?
That's quite true. And not only being committed, but being committed purposely by someone who said, this is the crime I'm going to commit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you got to admit one thing. Not, honesty with those who perpetrate a crime is a rarity, because usually they'll end up claiming the Fifth Amendment, which reading some of the notes that you sent for this program today, that some people think that pleading the Fifth is in the First Amendment.
Well, I didn't count them. I'm going to take the pundit's word at this, but apparently President Obama had said on 25 different occasions in the past that this is something he could not legally do, that he was not constitutionally entitled to do this, and yet last night, apparently, all bets are off.
Well, it kind of makes you wonder, that oath of office to execute the laws of the land and the Constitution, defend that Constitution. They're just words. It's a ceremonial thing just to get the ball rolling. That's kind of the idea. And Chuck's chomping at the bit here, too.
Bruce and Gary, the thing that I noticed was the arrogance, the absolute impunity with which he said to the American people and to Congress, go ahead and do something about it. You can't touch me. And where he gets this attitude, why he thinks he is the emperor, the king, the imperial poobah, I have no idea. And that irritated me more than anything. In fact, I was telling Corinne and Bruce before the show, my wife finally said to me, go upstairs to your room, because I was yelling at the TV again.
I can sense from across the room that your blood pressure is rising to dangerous levels. So go up to your room. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Actually, I have to admit myself, knowing what was coming down the pike, and didn't want to go and retire for the evening with anger on my mind. I didn't watch it till this morning, and what a way to ruin a cup of coffee, that's for sure.
Right. Well, if there's any good that came out of it, is that probably for the last week, more people have opened their pocket constitutions to Article 2 and read Article 2. More people have done that in the last week than have done it in the last 5 years, probably.
Yeah.
Well, tell you what, Gary, maybe for our listeners who have not done that, perhaps you can relate to us Article 2, if you could.
Well, of course, Article 2 is the executive. It lays out all of the powers and responsibilities of the office. And one of them, I can read it as many times as I want, but one of them I don't find is to write law.
Yeah.
And that is what happened last night. So what the president does have the responsibility to do is faithfully execute the law. And that's what he's not doing in this particular case.
Right, of course. Because some people will sit there, and of course on the other side will argue, and you've already heard, well, this is a temporary measure that he's taking care of, because it is a situation where nothing's being done. Of course, they don't point out the fact that nothing's getting done, because they held the House and the Senate for 6 years and got nothing but an Affordable Care Act jammed down our throats. Is that, he had a right to do a temporary thing.
Well, no. Simple answer.
Yeah. Shouldn't be so technical with us here.
There's no clause in Article 2 that says you can do temporary expedient things that are otherwise unconstitutional.
Right.
It just doesn't have that word.
Yeah, I often find it interesting that James Madison had mentioned the fact in his writings that if tyranny ever came to the shores of the United States, it would come from an outside entity. And I always say, well, Jimmy, you got that one wrong because it's come from within.
You know, and Gary, exactly. I noticed in just that one sentence in Section 3 of Article 2 where it says, he shall take care that the laws be faithfully executed. Well, he hasn't done that on anything so far, and now he's taken that other step, that other leap of his faith, his hope, that this is going to cure our problem and get the Congress to make a bipartisan effort. And as soon as he says bipartisan, in the next breath, he blames the Republicans and says, oh, they're going to shut down the government or whatever else he wants to do to accuse them. And I think he, as I recall, even said he didn't want to impugn anyone, and yet that's all he did was impugn the Republicans and what's happened. And forget the 390 bills that Harry Reid has left sit on his desk. He kept referring to the one that John Boehner didn't act on.
Right.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, I find it interesting that the very next sentence in Article 2, not the next clause, but the next sentence, reads, the President, Vice President, and all civil officers of the United States shall be removed from office on impeachment for and conviction of treason, bribery, and other high crimes and misdemeanors. Isn't that interesting?
Well, you know, and of course, that's one of the things that has been talked about with this. Is, you know, in fact, I find it very funny because yesterday, listening to all the lead up, listening to all the pundits, listening to the various analysis that were being done before this took place, is they, you know, some are talking the impeachment, but yet it sounded to me that they've manipulated this, at least this president has, to try to use the impeachment as a political wrangling tool for the 2016 elections, where he can do the old Eeyore, oh, woe is me, I tried to do what I could type of thing, where... And then even one said that when asked, is this, you know, with this president, is this an impeachable offense? And the comment was, well, it could be.
Yeah, right.
You know.
Well, it should be, but there's obviously going to be some after effects of that, and those have to be considered as well. But we shouldn't be at the point where we're considering what could be the political fallout of impeachment. We ought to be considering what does the Constitution require. And
right.
I think this is an impeachable offense myself.
And that brings us right to our topic, is why study the Constitution, why understand the Constitution, what it means. And as you've related time and time again, that when these elected representatives go to Congress, they're given a very embellished version of the Constitution to read, that my understanding from what you've said, it does not reflect what the Constitution actually states. And so why is it important to understand this document, Gary?
Well, there's a number of reasons, and first and foremost is because it is the people's document. The first three words, of course, make that clear. And so if you have ownership of something, then you ought to know what that thing is, what it amounts to, how it works. I mean, we study our cars. We go out, buy a car, and then we study the owner's manual to figure out how it works. Why don't we do the same thing with the Constitution?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very good point on that.
I think, too, with the Constitution, something like last night happened, and if people don't know the Constitution, they probably don't even know that he's violating the Constitution. I mean, President Obama did come out and say, what I'm going to do is unconstitutional. However, you know, if he didn't say that, I mean, this is the whole thing is, where does this stop? So, you know, what's next? And that's kind of scary to me. If people don't understand their rights, then they could so easily be taken advantage of. It's so frightening to me.
Well, that's just it. It will not stop until the owners of the document, the owners of the Constitution, say stop. So the American people have to rise up and say to their elected officials, stop this madness.
Well, Gary, and that brings up the point with the elected officials on there. I think if you look at, and I'm not a guy for following polls. They're nothing more than a snapshot, but they're about all you can go to get a discussion point going. Is, let's just take last night, for example. The percentage of Americans that were against this was very high. And you know they were contacting their representatives and voicing that. It comes down to these representatives doing the right thing by the people, and which they're not doing, because you hear the complaint, well, this would be devastating. This would be so disruptive to the country. And quite literally, it can't be any more devastating disruption than what 6 years of this president and this Congress has done. So maybe, you know, being disruptive to get through this, to put we're not tolerating this and do the right thing, would be good overall in the long run. You agree?
Yeah, right. Well, I would take some minor issue with what you just said, that you were assuming that everyone was calling their representatives to express their opinion. I'm not so sure that has taken place, and I think that if it had taken place at the level it should have, we might not have gotten this far. But that's certainly something that has to happen. People have to engage with their elected representatives. They have to make sure that their elected representatives understand their feelings on every important issue, not just these big issues that come around from time to time, but every issue that has import for the country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And, of course, on the legal, and let me ask you on this, Chuck, considering the folks out there are watching what's going on, they're hearing all the pundits, the spins on both sides. Of course, when you look at anything on the left, all you're getting is talking points on there. But in the legality sense, the impeachable offense, this is a crime.
No question about it, Bruce. And, it starts on Inauguration Day when the president puts his hand up and says he swears to uphold the laws and the Constitution of the United States and defend the country, and then proceeds not to do it. And this further step, and I think he's been testing the waters, one of the key things the pundits keep pointing out is that in his first 2 years, he had enough people in the Congress and in the Senate to have passed anything he wanted. He could have passed a bill. He didn't. And then 2 years later, he says, I'm going to use my pen and my phone as my sword to get done what I need to get done. And now he's gone and he's done it. I mean, forget executive orders, and I believe there's 193 that have been written so far. And then every president does executive orders. But this is beyond an executive order. This is an absolute, this is a mandate, a personal mandate. This is a mandate of what my agenda is, what I think the country looks like, and yet he calls himself a constitutional scholar. If he knew anything about the Constitution, I don't know how he could have possibly done this. I don't know how he could possibly have even proposed it. It says that from time to time he shall make recommendations to Congress on what they might consider. And I've kind of paraphrased that, Gary, but basically that's the gist of it. He'll make a recommendation on what they should consider, what they should look at. And he's gone so far beyond that, I'm just waiting for the next step. And I want to make a comment about something else. I think his timing is, he comes back from China, he announces it last night, and I believe everybody thinks that we're going to get the result in Ferguson, Missouri today. And you talk about the perfect storm. I'm not sure what the point is. He could have waited another week. He could have let Ferguson, ferment and maybe get calmed down. But he's done this, and Ferguson will get announced, and people will focus on Ferguson because there's going to be so much news coverage, and they'll forget about this.
Yes. That's exactly right. That is exactly right. And I want to bring up Eric Holder, because isn't it his job as the U.S. Attorney General to uphold, what has he said about any of this?
He's the chief law enforcement officer of the country. As the president, he doesn't legislate.
He's on,
Go ahead.
Yeah, he's on his way out, so obviously he's not going. Eric Holder's not going to do anything, and the new Attorney General is far from being confirmed. So
right now we don't have anyone that can. I mean, but can there be someone else who can speak out and uphold the law?
The Congress, I would hope, as a minimum, will censure the president and hold him in contempt for this egregious act. But that's a far shy sort of what they should be doing, which is considering impeachment.
Right.
Look at the treason clause in the Constitution. Treason against the United States shall consist only in levying war against them or in adhering to their enemies, giving them aid and comfort. What kind of aid and comfort did he give last night to the people who have flooded across our southern border illegally?
Well, and also, Gary, we can look at and we can kind of broaden the scope on the aid and comfort. Militarily wise, when we're going to do something, he'll appear on TV, explain an action and what we're not going to do, which gives aid and comfort to our opposing our enemy. And also puts our servicemen and women in a bad place. So this has been a routine thing that's been done. In fact, for a president, and I believe it also states in there, that the president's job is to defend the nation, to do what it takes to defend the nation. And by doing nothing to defend the nation and rather go out and play a golf game, let's say, for an example, instead of doing and directing the right things to do, that puts the nation in jeopardy, which is also a crime.
Well, it doesn't state that in so many words, but it certainly implied that his chief responsibility as the commander-in-chief is first and foremost defense of the nation.
Okay, so now this, Chuck, you have me thinking about this Ferguson thing, and it's really frustrating me. So I'm wondering, and I don't know if any of our other listeners are frustrated by this, because I think the timing is interesting, and I think you should be frustrated about it if you're not, because I don't want this to get swept under the rug with the Ferguson results coming out. So what can we do to make sure that we don't just let this pass by and ignore it as if it was a one-day thing to be upset about? So we should contact who? Our state reps? What should we do about that as we the people to make sure that this doesn't just happen for a day and then be done?
Well, Corinne, I think you've raised a very, very important point, but the responsibility for Ferguson lies across a broad spectrum of people, and it includes, and it starts with, in my opinion, the media. The media have hyped this up, put it on TV, played it over and over again, shown those scenes of the riots and what have you constantly. And what have we got now? We have the police who are already, they were showing it last night, in full riot gear. Mm-hmm. And they have a strategy, and they've brought in the National Guard. What we've done is we've continued to ramp it up, and it's been said repeatedly that no matter what the decision is, these people are going to come to the streets and protest, and the protest is going to spread into St. Louis. And who's to say it's not going to spread into Los Angeles or New York or Detroit or Chicago or Atlanta?
And Chuck, let me bring out that our old race baiter profession and also debtor, Al Sharpton, is mobilizing now and causing instigating that protests are held throughout the country, Philadelphia being one place, for example, that was mentioned.
Well, and last night I heard on TV that they have access to who goes into the White House. Al Sharpton has been to the White House 83 times.
Is that more time than Gruber?
I'm not sure. It may be very close, but I don't know if Al Sharpton's gotten $6 million either. But
I think he owes $6 million.
Probably. But the problem is that the situation, and last night my class was alternative dispute resolution. We were talking about how would you resolve something like Ferguson? Mm-hmm. We citizens, police, the mayor, etc., to sit down and talk about it instead of putting on full riot gear instead of people coming out and saying, no matter what happens, we're going to riot. Both sides are guilty of escalating this thing. And when you throw that into the pot after this immigration thing, you know that it's they're going to draw the connection together. We're going to see the on TV and we're going to hear about it on radio. The pundits are going to talk about it. It's going to inflame the situation, and our politicians who we sent to Washington to represent us and do something positive are going to be like, what do we do now? Because we want to get reelected.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, Ferguson, and Gary, you can back me up on this, you're a Virginian, is at least I know out in the Shenandoah Valley, we've got an old statement, a way of catching a snake, is that you take your left hand, you kind of wiggle it in front of the snake's face, and then you come around with your right hand, grab him by the back of the neck. And
works for me every time.
Yeah. And that is what, and I think that's a pretty good analogy that Chuck came up with. That's what Ferguson is. Ferguson is this waving hand in front of our face. And we're going to forget about, you know, everything that Obama just did last night. And, you know, coordinate? Yeah. That alone is a conspiracy.
Absolutely.
Well, I hope we don't forget about all that happened last night. But unfortunately, we all know the American people have short attention spans, and they're likely to do that. But let's hope that this becomes a catalyst for people to actually start studying their Constitution and discussing their Constitution in small groups and classes and across the backyard fence and have a real discussion about where this country needs to be in terms of its relationship to its founding document.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, Gary, in your piece this week, you gave some statistics about American citizens and their knowledge of the Constitution, and as opposed to, for example, you talked about their knowledge of The Simpsons. on the TV show. Well, I can tell you that you had the one statistic about people that could not even find Independence Day on a calendar. I have had that on a test in an exam in my class where students could not. I gave them the date. All they had to do was put down 4th of July or whatever. They couldn't put down anything.
No!
Yeah.
I'm serious.
There's Homer.
There we go.
That must be so sad, Chuck, to see that in college-level students.
Oh, this was law school.
Yeah.
Oh man.
Yeah.
That must be even sadder.
That now I'm getting real scared.
Yeah.
But we're
going to
be taking a break pretty soon, and when we come back from this break, I want to go down that path with the education on there because things that are taken for granted, things that people don't understand and know, such as they think driving a car is a right in the Constitution. And I like the one thing in that article that you sent along with your outline is people think owning a dog is that as well. So, you know,
that's my right, Bruce.
That's right. And so it's your right to have that car to drive by the dog. But I want to get into that and how we get people engaged, because that's one of the toughest things with education. If you cannot get people to relate to a topic, they're not interested.
Yeah.
And I think
you've got to make it easy for them. And the good news is it is easy.
Yeah.
And so we're going to explore some of that when we come back from our break.
Yeah, I want to remind our listeners quickly that if you've missed any of these previous shows on 1180 AM WFYL, this is We the People, Constitution Matters. You can go on over to 1180WFYL.com. Check out our podcast page. And you can also call in during the show at any point. You can call 610-539-TALK. Call in and let us know what you think about all these hot topics and questions you have about the Constitution. We'll try our best to answer that. That's 610-539-TALK. We do have to head to a commercial break, but we'll be right back. Stay tuned for more We the People, Constitution Matters.
And we are back here at We the People, Constitution Matters on this 21st day of November, 2014. And today do we have a topic today. It's being educated and why educate on the Constitution of the United States. On the phone with us is Gary Porter, and in studio is Chuck Proctor, and Corinne Lillis is joining us as always, and we are going over everything, considering what has taken place yesterday with the President of the United States coming forth and doing an mentioning executive action, which he's supposedly signing today at the school where he promised to do something in, I believe it's Nevada. So there's a lot of things going on. This is the importance and why people should be educated on the Constitution itself.
So we're going to take a moment. We're going to bring in our caller. We have Ben from West Norton. I know you just called in, Ben, to ask a question, and we want to welcome you to the program this morning. Ben, are you there?
I am. Thanks.
Good morning. Welcome to We the People, Constitution Matters. We understand you have a question, so the floor is yours. What do you have for us?
Thanks a lot. I've listened to you folks regularly, and something that was just said in the last segment was that if the president knew the Constitution, he would do X. I listen to other hosts a lot, and they talk about all kinds of motivations for President Obama, like, you know, oh, he's incompetent, or he's X, Y, or Z. And when I look at it, I think we're all missing the mark. If you look back to Aristotle, he tells us that contradictions don't exist. If we presume that the president is supposed to be acting in the best interest of the nation, we expect a certain outcome. But since we're clearly not seeing that, then the premise that he's acting in the best interest is clearly wrong. We have to go back and look ahead. He does know the Constitution. He's not a dumb guy. What really is the case is he doesn't care. So I just wanted to throw that in there, throw a little Aristotle at you this morning.
Ben, that's a pretty good analogy that you're giving there. And, of course, you know, I tend to agree with you myself that he does know the Constitution, because if he didn't know the Constitution, he wouldn't be able to try to manipulate it as he's trying to do. Gary, do you, you believe... Oh, Gary's not on right yet. Okay, we lost Gary.
We have David Whitney on our lines as well.
Oh, okay. Nope, we got a dial tone there. All right, Chuck.
David Whitney, we're going to bring you in. Welcome to the program this morning.
Good morning. How are you doing this morning?
Morning, David.
We're doing great. We're talking about educating the people on the Constitution and talking a little bit about President Obama last night and that means.
Yeah. And before we get with you, David, I want to get Chuck's opinion of the caller's question or comments that he had.
Well, I think the caller is dead on regarding and the analogy that he used, as you referred to, Bruce, in that with the self-proclaimed constitutional scholar that supposedly taught constitutional law in a law school, who would theoretically know it inside and out, would know every word, and the application. And what he's done is, as the I think the caller was alluding to, is he's taken general references and Obama has expanded them to fit his personal agenda. And again, I keep coming back to that. It's his personal agenda of what he thinks the country should look like, what he thinks we should be doing, and using and he says, I've got the authority for it. Well, how is it that 25 times, and I've seen a half dozen of the clips where he says, I don't have the authority, I can't do that, only Congress can do it. But now, because Congress hasn't done what he wants, he's going to take some action, which he says, I think, Bruce, keyword, temporary.
Yeah.
Now, we all know that nothing's temporary. There's the emergency tax from the 50s in Pennsylvania that all the state stores are burdening under, and why we're trying to do privatization. That was an emergency tax in the 50s.
Yeah.
It's never been lifted. And people don't realize it's 18%.
Yeah.
And so why would we want to get rid of this? Nothing is temporary. This is pushing his agenda. For a constitutional scholar, and again, I say self-proclaimed, he certainly has pushed the boundaries of any semblance of adherence to it.
Well, exactly. And I'll give you an idea of temporary in the federal government, which I know well when I worked down in Washington. There was a quote-unquote temporary building that they put in next to National Park Service, National Capital Region headquarters, and it was for the Tourmobile survey. It was temporary building. concrete, steel, the whole thing like a regular building, but it was temporary. And to this day, that temporary building's still there, and it's been there now probably 30 years. So, you know, nothing has longevity more than anything governmental that's temporary.
Exactly my point. And he'll do this. Ferguson will hit the newspapers. People will forget about it. And then he'll take the next step, which Lord only knows what that's going to be. Tear down the fence or, you know, have welcome wagons at the border.
Yeah.
Well, we really appreciate that call from... the question from our caller, Ben, calling from West Narton. So thank you, Ben, for that call. And welcome back onto our line, Gary Porter.
Yeah, Gary's back with us. But let's bring David Whitney in here. David Whitney is the pastor and senior instructor at the Institute of the Constitution. And, David, you've been listening to what we've talked about. Some words from you on this and some thoughts.
Well, I like the insight of what the progression you see where he said he didn't have the authority. You see, what he believes in is a living constitution, and that is the constitution winds up changing and evolving according to him at his whim, at his speed, and that's the opposite of what our founders believed. They believed in a fixed standard. The constitution was not something that could be morphed and changed except by the amendment process as detailed in Article 5. The bigger picture that is really important to understand is that if you're going to properly interpret the Constitution, you have to get into the worldview, in other words, the mindset of our founding fathers. If you don't understand their thinking and you just try to woodenly look at the words on the paper and say, well, we can make this word mean this, like that famous, or I should say infamous lawyer who said, it all depends on what the word is means.
So, I don't know who you're talking about.
Big picture. It's really given to us with a Declaration of Independence. It's really simple. It's not that difficult to understand. You don't have to be a constitutional scholar to have gone to law school to understand. It's very simple. Their worldview, what we call at the Institute on the Constitution, the American view, is first of all, there is a creator God. And that very clearly was identified as the God of the Bible by our founders. There is a creator God. The second point is that our rights come from him. And the third point is extremely critical, that the only purpose, and you need to underline that word only, the only purpose of human civil government is to secure and protect those God-given rights. Mm-hmm. Obama doesn't believe that. We know he doesn't believe that. Once he quoted the Declaration, he dropped creator out of it altogether because he does not want to acknowledge that there is a higher authority than himself.
Oh, good point.
He is the highest authority.
Yeah,
he is,
that's true.
You know, God incarnate, so to speak. Heaven help us if he was, but he's more like the opposite, the enemy of God. But
until we have that limited view of
law and government, we won't be able to restrain the federal government.
So, David, what you're telling me that it took Obama 6 days to create the heaven and the earth, and on the seventh day he played golf. Is that about it?
Well, I thought he played golf on all 7 days.
My mistake. Foolish me. Gary, you teach the Constitution as well. How do you go about this? This is a challenge.
Yes, that document I sent you, and I hope you've found or will find a way to post that so your readers can download it and make use of the hyperlinks that are embedded in there.
Yeah.
That document is basically an outline of lesson one of my course, and I show them that not only why they have to understand the Constitution, but there's innumerable reasons why they should. We've discussed some of them, but I also show them how easy it is. I got started on an IOTC course, Institute on the Constitution course. That's what got me started in this whole thing, and it was a very easy way to get introduced to the concepts of the Constitution and the founders' worldview. But there are other courses out there as well, and there are study guides free online that people can avail themselves of. There, Hillsdale College has an excellent free online course on the Constitution. There are YouTube videos that people can watch. There are a number of great guides that they can get, the Heritage Guide to the Constitution, the Founders Constitution. Both of these are on, have been put online. They're print documents, print books, but they've also been put online so you can access them from home. So there's a wealth of information out there. It's easily to access. It's at your fingertips if you've got a computer, and it's easy to find if you don't. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the information is out there. All you need is really the initiative to go out and grab it.
Yeah, and I think an important way to start that, for a parent's sake, because I believe that a lot of this comes down to the parents and, you know, holding their children accountable. I mean, you've been entrusted to raise children that God has given to you, so I think that's one of the responsibilities. And, like, you know, Chuck has had some students who don't know some really crucial dates in history, so, and that's not necessarily their fault. I feel bad for them, you know, that they look unintelligent, but a lot of it comes down to the parents. So I think that the parents can start by just starting up a conversation with their kids, you know, seeing what they do and don't know, what they have been learning in school. And I think that these are good resources, Gary, for parents to go to and to access, because I know that a lot of parents are working. Both parents are working, you know, they're working overtime. You know, you don't have a lot of extra time, but just starting a simple conversation, maybe at dinner or some other time, I think finding out what your kids know and then these resources, would you say, Gary, that they're... It wouldn't take a terrible amount of time for parents to discuss this with their kids?
No, it's easy. And I love Juliet Turner's book, Our Constitution Rocks. It, you know, it's geared to middle school and older kids. Hmm. There's books out there for even younger kids that can get them started on these concepts. The earlier the better. I mean, if you can talk about anything with your kids, you can start talking about their rights, where those rights come from, and how they are to be protected.
And I think something else I want to bring up, too, that Sam mentioned to me after our show last, Sam Rohr, at the end of last show last week, he said something about, you know, grandparents also can do stuff. They can teach their grandchildren. So let's say the grandparents, you know, their kids have kids and their kids don't necessarily know as much as they would like them to. Well, it's another chance for grandparents to teach their grandkids things, start young with them. So that's
perfect.
Another option as well that Sam brought up last week.
You know, one of the things that we did with our kids, because we were traveling a lot with sports and one activity or another, and we would have fun in the car, and we would go over things like everything from who's the president and the vice president to, as I was telling Bruce and Corinne during the break, my kids know the only state that has a unicameral legislature, and that's North Dakota, because we would make it fun. And as we would take a trip, we were going to Washington or going to visit a relative somewhere, we would use things in scenery, you know, there's that game of how many cows are out there or something. Well, we would turn it into how many senators and congressmen are there, and they learned that way. So it wasn't just my lecturing them or my having a discussion or a class with them. We made it fun. We made it a learning experience through common times, basically mostly in the car and some at dinner time, and it's carried
perfect.
Over to this day.
Yeah.
And
speaking of fun, there's a game, a board game out called Constitution Quest, and I give you a hyperlink to it on that document I sent. So you can turn this into a family game after dinner around the table.
Yeah, exactly. And David, let me ask you this one.
David had to go.
He's no longer
on our line.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'll go to you two gentlemen and Corinne as well. Is we've identified that. Primary, it's the parents. In any form of education, the parents are numero uno in teaching their children. It's their responsibility. After all, they are parents. Corinne, you bring up something that Sam mentioned, which is very good, is that a lot of children, they're day in and day out with the parents, but the grandparents are special. And when the grandparents say something, the kids usually sit up and take notice. And the grandparents getting involved with this, too. That goes without saying. It's the family.
Yeah.
Now, schools, on the other hand, are falling real fast by the wayside in teaching anything, at least in American history, or even government classes. And this is something that I have seen. In fact, I've even seen here in Pennsylvania, there was a history book that came out. They were distributing in schools on the history of Pennsylvania. And they were pointing out such noteworthy and historic Pennsylvanians as Sally Dressy Raphael and Will Smith, and Ben Franklin maybe got a sentence. But they're not teaching and doing anything along the lines of that, of teaching the Constitution, teaching the right, a government class. I got a little bit of it in junior high school. I got it in high school, but these kids today are not getting this. Are you two gentlemen, Corinne, have you seen this as well?
Yeah, Chuck, do you want to?
Well, I know from watching my children go through school, private Christian school, they did not have the civics class that I had. By ninth grade, in fact, my copy of the Constitution, the copyright on this is 1975. Okay, that's how long I've had it, and I still carry it around with me today. And but they're not teaching civics the same way. They're not teaching it in depth. They're not going through the Constitution article by article. And as a result, we get the results that Gary was sharing with us of people thinking that dog rights are in the First Amendment or the right to drive a car. And that's the direct result of our education system. Now, I know the education system, with each passing day, is burdened with, how do we get all the information that we've gathered, all the knowledge that we've gathered, into these kids? I realize that somewhere along the line you've got to make a selection process, because I know in my teaching, I have to look at before the semester starts, look at the book and say, what am I going to cover? I can't do it all. So I realize that's an issue. But why aren't we making the fundamentals of the priority? Why aren't we making civics and Bible study? I'm sorry, I'm getting all really carried away here, Bruce, I can tell. But civics and Bible study and things like this are primary core elements in education, along with math and reading and English.
Yeah,
well, English. I work with lawyers who don't have the faintest clue about English grammar, sentence structure, syntax, any of the other things that are appropriate for what we do as attorneys writing.
Yeah.
They abuse it.
I think a lot of things, too. I just feel like, at least for me, in my opinion, I think that everything just feels so rushed. Like in school, you know, you have to jam-pack all this information in quickly, and you have to do well on the state tests and all sorts of things because, you know, you want to make the school look good and for funding purposes and all sorts of things. And I just think everything is so rushed, and I know that's why I really think that school choice is so important, because every child, I think, learns so differently. And for a teacher to be able to cater to an individual student one-on-one, I don't know, I think a big problem that this stems out of is everything is so rushed, and they don't take the time to realize, like, you know, is this student learning everything as well as the next student? And I think that they don't have the time, which is sad, but that's why I think school choice is so important.
Well, and this also, Gary, comes into something that I've talked about for years, and I've made mention for years. In fact, I was before I retired from the government, I was in a meeting one time where they were talking about what they're going to do and present to the visitors that come to the park. And I made the grievous mistake of saying, well, it sounds to me that this is nothing more than another case of dumbing down of America. And boy, did I get raked over to coals for that comment. But it seems like I hit the nerve on the agenda that's still going today. Do you believe that's so?
Well, I think it is, but there is one remedy I found recently. There's a little fire plug out in Ohio named Ricky Pepin, and she and David know each other. They work on the IOTC project together, and she instigated a remedy in their legislation in Ohio. They passed a bill which required all public schools in Ohio to spend time on the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and also the principles, the founding principles that our country was based on. So they have required that the schools cover this material. And I think that was a very innovative way to approach it. Now, whether the schools do or not, that's another question, but at least they have the requirement laid out that not only do they have to cover these documents, they have to also teach the founding principles and the founders' view of those principles.
Yeah. Well, we've got about 5 minutes left. And what I want to do a little round-the-table roundhouse here on this, is that educating people on the Constitution is, we've all agreed, important. And I'd like to get everybody's spin, not so much spin, but opinion, on why they feel it's important, what steps we can do to get this back in the forefront, besides, actually, the President of the United States is helping greatly in this. For 6 years, I see more people looking at things with the Constitution than I've ever done in the past. But I want to kind of throw a roundhouse on this and start with you, Chuck.
Well, first of all, it's important because we're the greatest nation in the history of the world.
Mm-hmm.
Everything that we've done, whether it's economically or any other realm, we have been the leaders and for the longest period of time. And without being a brutal, oppressive dictatorship or what have you. Secondly, and Gary can expound on this, it's not just studying the Constitution or reading the Declaration of Independence. It's reading the materials that our founding fathers wrote voluminously about, whether it's the Federalist Papers, whether it's Jefferson, Madison, Franklin, and finding out what they had to say about all of the processes that they went through, the Declaration, the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, how that came about and what their thoughts were and what they based it on. And they based it on one thing, and that was their faith in God and their faith in the fact that God gave them this land and gave them this country for a singular purpose. And without that background, the Constitution, if you just read it, okay, you can read it, that's fine. But we need to also incorporate into the studies what the founding fathers believed and what they wrote and why they did it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Gary?
Yep. Well, I want to make 2 points. Number one, there are individuals and there are groups in this country who have set out as their goal to fundamentally transform America into something it has never been. And they will be successful. They are devoted to that cause, and they will be successful unless the people of this country say no. The people of this country, if they like what America has been in the past and want to retain those principles, they will have to fight for that. John Stuart Mill said, "A people may prefer a free government, but if from indolence or carelessness or cowardice or want of public spirit, they are unequal to the exertions necessary for preserving it, if they will not fight for it when directly attacked, they are more or less unfit for liberty." That is exactly the situation we find ourselves in today. There are people who are trying to change this country, and if you don't want that to happen, you have to fight for the right for the American principles that have guided this country for 200 years. The second point is that, as Chuck said, you have to not just read the Constitution, but you have to read, you have to understand the American mind. Jefferson said that the Declaration of Independence was just an exposition of the American mind. What was the American mind in 1776? What was the American mind in 1787? You can understand these things. It's not a mystery. The documents are all out there, and you can understand how these men felt, how these men thought, where they got their ideas. So it is not a big mystery. It is not some black hole that you have to plunge into.
Gary, we have to cut you off. We have about a minute left here. Sorry.
Okay.
We'll continue talking
about
this next week. Yeah. But I just want to say quickly that I think that the perspective of the Constitution needs a change. It's pretty simple. I think people don't have the right idea about it, and they think of it as, you know, this dreadful, boring thing. And I think if you look at it more of a blessing and a privilege and your rights, I think your whole perspective needs a change, and I think that's a good place to start.
That's it. And so we're going to have to leave it there. I'd like to thank Gary Porter, Chuck Proctor, and David Whitney, who jumped into the pool and swam with us a little bit here as we continue our voyage through the Constitution, why educating the people and why people should be educated on the document is so important, is that now next Friday we will not be here live. We'll be doing a pre-recording. We're going to take the Thanksgiving holiday off, but we'll be back the following Friday. So on behalf of all of us here at We the People Constitution Matters on 1180 AM WFYL, I'm Bruce Stocking.
And I'm Corinne Lillis.
Have a great weekend.